members, her fellow members here in the student body, of this invitation which makes possible sharing with you in this chapel experience. I do not ask why I'm invited as a Presbyterian to benefit from the association with the Baptists. I long ago learned you do not ask questions. Dr. Norman Wiggins, that magnificent and to me almost miraculous president of Campbell College, loves to tell the story of the woman who had been summoned to jury duty, and as he says, came dressed in a way which gave every indication that she not only was glad to be summoned, but she was determined to be of service if she possibly could. And she had been called to appear and was being questioned by the attorneys, and the attorney for the defense looked at her and said, "Lady, do you know me?" She said, "Yes, I do, and you're the biggest crook I know." He pointed in the direction of the prosecuting attorney and he said, "Lady, do you know that gentleman?" She said, "Yes, I do, and he's just as big a crook as you are." And the judge had been listening rather attentively and interestedly from the bench, and he summoned both the lawyers there. He said, "Gentlemen, I have heard the conversation and what's been going on, and I just want to say this to you. If either of you ask her if she knows me, I'll bar both of you from the court." So you didn't ask questions. You just rejoice in all the favors and blessings of the day and thank God for them. At least I do. You may not, because I know how my seminary days are still warm enough in my mind to know how you feel about visiting preachers. And as Dr. Hewitt said, from Scotland, and I warn you now, they not only teach us there to keep the Sabbath day, but everything else we can lay our hands on. And so, I haven't lost any of those. But being a Presbyterian, I've told lots of you before, I have a Lutheran friend, because I guess you always wonder, you know, what or who a Presbyterian is. His classic definition of a Presbyterian is, he defines a Presbyterian as a Baptist with a drinking problem who isn't rich enough to be an Episcopalian. I'm not sure about that, but you can take it for what it's worth. Hear these words from 1 Corinthians 13. Where Paul, you remember, writes, "Love never ends. As for prophecy, it will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For our knowledge is imperfect and our prophecy is imperfect. But when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I gave up childish ways. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child." And it's on this affirmation of the Apostle Paul that I would like for us to think this morning. And to me, the great thing about a text like this is that you can heartily disagree with whatever conclusions the preacher himself reaches. Because we are dealing in an area which to some degree is nebulous, and yet also recognizing that now on the student bodies of our seminaries, a great proportion of you are married and with children, you can reach your own conclusions as to what Paul had in mind. But have you ever really wondered what concept the Apostle Paul had in mind when he said, "When I was a child, I spake like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child"? I speak like a child. How does a child speak? Falteringly? Hesitatingly? Yes. But I think above all else, a child speaks bluntly. And not only bluntly, but harshly. In all my 35 years as an ordained minister, my closest encounters of the worst kind have been with children. And I say it honestly, I stand in awe of them, though I had three of them myself, and they taught me a lesson in their own blunt, honest, but harsh way. This summer I had a wedding, and there was a little flower girl in it. She must have been about 5 years of age, and while we were You know, they gather in the sanctuary afterwards for pictures. She was sitting on a pew by herself, and I thought I'd just be looked sort of lonely. And she seemed so timid during the service, though she had done exactly as he was expected to do, somewhat mechanically and perfunctorily, but she'd done it. But I thought I'd just go over and strike up a conversation with her. And I began to ask her questions, how old she was, where she would be in school, and so forth and so on. And she answered, I could tell reluctantly, and finally she looked at me. And I gave her an opportunity to talk, and she said, Mister, you sure have a big mouth. You can say what you please about children, but I think when Paul said, I spoke as a child, I think he was thinking of the harshness, the coldness, the frankness, yes, with which a child speaks. And so many times lacking in love. Job, you remember, had this experience in his own life when in chapter 18, you remember, as he describes his own woes, some of the experiences which so befell him, and he said, yea, young children despise me. I arose and they spoke against me. And can I now you hear them? As they saw Job in his tattered clothes, with his body so made ugly by the boils and the other afflictions of his day and time, the scratching, the bleeding, this horrible physical figure of a man. And you can imagine children looking at him in amazement, and then in their own cold, harsh, cruel way, tormenting him and teasing him, laughing at him, making him an object of ridicule as only a child can. The unkindest people in the world can be children. Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. He spoke harshly, he spoke bluntly. But evidently he had learned when he became a man and to become a Christian, he'd been able to speak the truth in love. And oh, what a difference that makes. And I think this is the problem that confronts so many of us who are ministers. As we are blessed with our convictions and shared with our church families, it's so even easy oft times to be irritated and annoyed and dissatisfied and displeased and to speak the truth, but never to speak the truth in love. And consequently, we are never then the adequate and satisfying ministers of God that we ought to be. Remember Paul in Ephesians writing, but speaking the truth in love, grow up into Christ in all things. He said, when I was a child, I spake as a child. And I suggest to you this morning, one of the troubles of a child speaking is that a child speaks honestly, but harshly and brutally. And then he says, I thought as a child. Well, I don't know how you think of a child as thinking. I think of a child as thinking manipulatively, and I'm not sure that's a good word. But I think as a child sits and ponders, they're always thinking in terms of manipulating. How can I manipulate mother against daddy? And you know how they do. How can I manipulate things so that, you know, I'll get the time out that I need? How can I manipulate things so that I don't have to listen to daddy preach on Sunday? You know, we are as children, constantly thinking in terms of manipulating. How can I play one against the other? How can I milk this to the best results for myself? Now, you may disagree. But to me, this is one of the characteristics of the thought of a child, forever thinking manipulatively. How can I order things for my benefit, for my good, and solely for my enrichment? And you know, a lot of us haven't grown up much, have we, in our thoughts towards God? How often do we ourselves, in all our relationships, seek to manipulate God? How many people today want God not to be God's man, but for somehow or other what God can bring to them? How many times do people try to strike bargains with God God, if only you'll do this for me, if only you will be this for me, God, if only you will bring this to pass, then this is the kind of individual I will be. How many of us want God on our side for selfish reasons? How many of us like to wear the cross, but never want to be on a cross? Paul says, when I was a child, I thought as a child. And to me, a child always thinks manipulatively, for his own benefit, for his own selfish blessing, for the attainment of his own particular desires. And lastly, he said, when I was a child, I not only spoke as a child, I not only thought as a child, but I reasoned as a child. How does a child reason? I think a child reasons erratically. A child, and it isn't expected to be, never reasons on the basis of solid, sound convictions. A child always reasons on the basis of instincts and erratically. How many of you know that? How many of you with children have received from them late in November or early in December a Christmas list of all the things they've wanted, and then on Christmas Eve they change their minds? And I know some of you know the frantic way in you pursue Christmas Eve, trying to find another doll which has suddenly become the favorite. Or they've looked at television, you see, and on the impulse of the influence of television, you see, they want this and they want that. And being parents and loving them, oftentimes unwisely, and never more so at Christmas time, we want to provide their every desire. We want to satisfy them according to their erratic, impulsive way of reasoning. And that's what oftentimes destroys, to a great extent, Christmas Eve. And particularly so if they are set on something that you have to assemble. I lost more of the spirit of Christmas on Christmas Eve. It got to the point where I said, look, we'll never bring into our house anything that has to be assembled on Christmas Eve. Manufacturers don't always bring you the nuts and the bolts. There's always a part missing, or I lose something. And you go through that. Why? Because children can be so erratic in their thinking. And it's to be expected. But Paul said, when I became a man, I gave it up. Why? Because he began to reason on the basis of his own reason convictions. Look at Peter. When he became a Christian, when he was first touched by Jesus, he was still a childish individual in the way of reasoning. He could say, Master, bid me follow thee, to the very end I will, and then he could deny him. He could say, bid me walk on the water, and then cry out, God save me. But then later on, towards the end of his life, as he became the man that Jesus Christ predicted someday he would be, he wrote to his followers and said, be ready, every one of you, to give a reason for the faith that dwells within you. In other words, he was saying, men, reach your own convictions and conclusions, and on that basis, reason your way through the Christian faith. So Paul said, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, spoke bluntly. He said, when I became a man, he didn't say it. He spoke bluntly, but he spoke with love. Remember, he said, I thought as a child, I thought manipulatively. And afterwards, he began to think only in terms, not of what God could do for him, but solely what he himself could do for God. And then he said, I reasoned once as a child, I reasoned erratically. But there came a day when he could say, I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. And I say it in all honesty, there are days when I'm still childish. And I can only pray that God, through the Holy Spirit, will move me, and I believe you, more and more on the way from childhood to marvelous Christian manhood. When I speak and think and reason, not as a child, but as a man of God.